It's fun to be inquisitive. Be nosy. Stick to your passion. Find out more for yourself. Quest is fun. Join me, 13-year-old Tristan Pang, on a journey of inspiration. Welcome to Youth Voices.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to my program. This is your host, Tristan Pang, on Planet FM 104.6. Youth Voices. Good to have your company on this Wednesday afternoon. In a few weeks, I'll be heading off to Australia to speak at the World Science Festival in Brisbane in a panel titled The Future is in Good Hands. It will be a very great experience, including meeting the panel moderator, the renowned Nobel Prize laureate, Professor Brian Schmidt. So here is part of his highly interesting TED Talk on the universe.
The universe is big. Now let's take a tour of it using the speed of light as our guide. Light travels around the Earth 7.5 times a second. 300,000 kilometers per second. And so that means when Neil Armstrong took his small step, we found out about it 1.5 seconds after it occurred. Now, you may not realize it, but the sun is much bigger than the Earth-Moon system, about 5 light seconds across. But it appears so small because it's so far away, 8 light minutes in distance. Now, when you leave TEDx this evening, I want you to look up in the sky, and I want you to look at the brighter of the two pointer stars to the Southern Cross, almost straight overhead. That stellar system, Alpha Centauri, is the nearest star to us, 4.3 light years in distance. So if you think Alpha Centauri being a P, and it turns out Alpha Centauri is much like our own sun, another P, and I'm standing here in Sydney as Alpha Centauri, the sun would be located 270 kilometers down the road at my vineyard just outside of Canberra, with all that space empty between us. And that's particularly remarkable when you think that we are one of the most exciting places in the universe, a galaxy of 100 billion suns, and we're located some 30,000 light years out from the center of our own Milky Way. Now, the Milky Way is just one but of many galaxies. The nearest galaxy of any size is the Andromeda Galaxy, visible in the northern hemisphere, 2 million light years in distance. Now, we astronomers like big telescopes so we can see a long ways into the universe's past. The deepest picture we've been able to take of stars and galaxies is this one, taken with the Hubble Space Telescope. It looks back 12 billion years into the universe's past. Each one of those dots is a galaxy with tens and hundreds of billions of stars like our own Milky Way. This image is 1/32,000,000th of the sky. So while the universe is big, the part that we can see is not infinite. And that is because we simply run out of time. Here is an image of the universe 13.7 billion years ago. You're not seeing stars, you're not seeing galaxies. You're seeing a sea of hydrogen and helium formed at the very beginning, the Big Bang. All right, so if we go out and look at how we figured all this out, it really all started at the beginning of the 20th century. If you take the light of a star and you spread it out into the colors of the rainbow after looking at it with the telescope, you will see that every element has a fingerprint of color which it emits or absorbs. And that fingerprint allows us to see what's going on in the distant universe. A man most of you have not heard of, Vesto Melvin Slipher, took the light of galaxies and spread them out into these spectra, as we call them. And he saw that these galaxies looked a lot like stars, but there was a difference. Their light was stretched to the red. And he could understand that using something called the Doppler shift. Now, the Doppler shift we're familiar with here on Earth because it affects sound waves. So, for example, if a police car is coming towards you, its siren sounds are compressed. And when you compress sound, it raises the pitch. As the car goes away from you, then we see it from the other side. We see the sound waves lengthened or lowered in pitch. Now, light is a wave, just like sound. And so the same thing occurs. If a galaxy is moving towards you, its light is compressed, making the light bluer. If it is going away from you, the light is stretched, making it redder. So in 1916, when Slipher made these measurements, he found something remarkable. He found that almost every one of these galaxies was moving away from us, indicating we were something seemingly very special in the universe, a place which everything was rapidly trying to get away from. Now, that was a mystery that was solved by measuring distances. We astronomers cannot just go down and lay a ruler down between us and the nearest galaxy. We have to do things by how things appear. So as you go further and further away, things appear fainter or smaller. And Edwin Hubble was able to use this fact in 1929, thanks to having access to the largest telescope in the world at the time, the 100-inch Hooker telescope just outside of Los Angeles. And he went through and he looked at stars in Slipher's galaxies. And he judged their distance by how bright those stars appeared. And what he found was that the faster the galaxy was moving away, the fainter its stars. Or in other words, the further the object was, the faster it was moving away. And he proclaimed that that meant, in 1929, that the universe is expanding. Now, why did he say that? Thanks to the wonders of a computer, I'm going to make a little toy version of the universe, which I will expand for you. And now I want to take those two images and I want to overlay them. And what do I see? I see from our vantage point of an expanding universe that nearby objects have moved a little bit and distant objects have moved a lot. In other words, in an expanding universe, we see that the further away something is, the faster it will be moving away from us, just like what Hubble saw. Now, we also understand the expansion of the universe because of Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein's theory of gravity was born out of a thought he had in 1907. And that thought was that he felt that acceleration due to motion was equivalent to acceleration due to gravity. That is, if you were in a box here on Earth or in a box in a rocket that was accelerating, you cannot tell those two situations apart. A small thought, but one that took Einstein more than 8 years to figure out. And in the end, it was his equations of general relativity that were the result. They predicted curved space, and it also allowed him to do something that Newton was never able to do with his version of gravity, which was to solve for cosmology, how the universe works on large scales. But there was a problem in 1917 when he did this work. His solution said that the universe should be in motion. But this was 12 years before Hubble made his discovery that the universe was expanding. So he had to think and look at his equations very carefully, and he realized he could do something. He could add something he called the cosmological constant. This is energy that is fundamental to space itself, and this stuff makes gravity push rather than pull in his equations. So by adding a bit of this stuff to space, he could counteract the effects of gravity and make the universe stable.
If you want to listen to the rest of the talk, just search up Professor Brian Schmidt in TEDx Sydney. Next, I would like to share with you a mind-blowing video that I watched this morning about the education system, staged as a court case.
Albert Einstein once said, "Everybody's a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing that it is stupid." Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, today on trial we have modern day schooling. Glad you could come. Not only does he make fish climb trees, but also makes them climb down and do a 10-mile run. Tell me, school, are you proud of the things you've done? Turning millions of people into robots, do you find that fun? Do you realize how many kids relate to that fish? Swimming upstream in class, never finding their gifts, thinking they are stupid, believing they are useless? Well, the time has come. No more excuses. I call school to the stand and accuse him of killing creativity, individuality, and being intellectually abusive. He's an ancient institution that has outlived his usage. So, Your Honor, this concludes my opening statement. And if I may present the evidence of my case, I will prove it.
Proceed.
Exhibit A. Here's a modern-day phone. Recognize it? Here's a phone from 150 years ago. Big difference, right? Stay with me. Here's a car from today. And here's a car from 150 years ago. Big difference, right? Well, get this. Here's a classroom of today. And here's a class we used 150 years ago. Now, ain't that a shame? In literally more than a century, nothing has changed. Yet you claim to prepare students for the future? But with evidence like that, I must ask, do you prepare students for the future or the past? I did a background check on you and let the record show that you were made to train people to work in factories, which explains why you put students in straight rows, nice and neat, tell them sit still, raise your hand if you want to speak, give them a short break to eat, and for 8 hours a day, tell them what to think. Oh, and make them compete to get an A, a letter which determines product quality, hence grade A of meat. I get it. Back then, times were different. We all have a past. I myself am no Gandhi. But today, we don't need to make robot zombies. The world has progressed. And now we need people who think creatively, innovatively, critically, independently, with the ability to connect. See, every scientist will tell you that no two brains are the same. And every parent with two or more children will confirm that claim. So please explain why you treat students like cookie cutter frames or snapback hats, giving them this one-size-fits-all crap.
Watch your language.
Sorry, Your Honor. But if a doctor prescribed the exact same medicine to all of his patients, the results would be tragic. So many people would get sick, yet when it comes to school, this is exactly what happens, this educational malpractice, where one teacher stands in front of 20 kids, each one having different strengths, different needs, different gifts, different dreams, and you teach the same thing the same way? That's horrific. Ladies and gentlemen, the defendant should not be acquitted. This may be one of the worst criminal offenses ever to be committed. And let's mention the way you treat your employees.
Objection.
Overruled. I want to hear this.
It's a shame. I mean, teachers have the most important job on the planet, yet they're underpaid? No wonder so many students are shortchanged. Let's be honest. Teachers should earn just as much as doctors, because a doctor can do heart surgery and save the life of a kid. But a great teacher can reach the heart of that kid and allow him to truly live. See, teachers are heroes that often get blamed, but they're not the problem. They work in a system without many options or rights. Curriculums are created by policymakers, most of which have never taught a day in their life. Just obsessed with standardized tests. They think bubbling in a multiple choice question will determine success. That's outlandish. In fact, these tests are too cruel to be used and should be abandoned, but don't take my word for it. Take Frederick J. Kelly, the man who invented standardized testing, who said, and I quote, "These tests are too cruel to be used and should be abandoned." Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if we continue down this road, the results will be lethal. I don't have much faith in school, but I do have faith in people. And if we can customize healthcare, cars, and Facebook pages, then it is our duty to do the same for education, to upgrade it, change it, do away with school spirit, because that's useless. Unless we're working to bring the spirit out of each and every student, that should be our task. No more common core. Instead, let's reach the core of every heart in every class. Sure, math is important, but no more than art or dance. Let's give every gift an equal chance. I know this sounds like a dream, but countries like Finland are doing impressive things. They have shorter school days. Teachers make a decent wage. Homework is non-existent, and they focus on collaboration instead of competition. But here's the kicker, boys and girls. Their educational system outperforms every other country in the world. Other places like Singapore are succeeding rapidly. Schools like Montessori, programs like Khan Academy. There is no single solution, but let's get moving. Because while students may be 20% of our population, they are 100% of our future. So let's attend to their dreams, and there's no telling what we can achieve. This is a world in which I believe. A world where fish are no longer forced to climb trees. I rest my case.
Don't forget to tune in next month on the 5th of April, where I will share with you some experiences about my time in Brisbane. So for today, that's it from me, Tristan Pang. Thanks for listening. I welcome your feedback and your support of the program. And please write to me on Facebook or email me to youthvoicesnz@gmail.com. And don't forget to like Youth Voices with Tristan Pang on Facebook. And if you want to listen to my other shows, please go to my website, www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. That's www.quest-is-fun.org.nz/youthvoices. Join me again for another exciting program next month on the first Wednesday at 2:10 p.m. or listen anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/youthvoices or listen to the archive on my website www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices.